Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Oklahoma Perspective. After the death of Terrence Crutcher, the international watchdog group Human Rights Watch sent a researcher to Tulsa to investigate whether or not there were systemic human rights abuses in law enforcement. The report generated from that research is expected in September. In anticipation of that report, recently, Deputy Chief of Police Jonathan Brooks and Public Information Officer Sergeant Shane Toole sat down for a one-hour interview about the Tulsa Police Department, their goals, and their challenges. This is the interview in its entirety.
Out of 280,000 contacts, only 14,000 arrests were made. I say only, but over 14,000 arrests. That's when an officer, and I want to define arrest for you, that's when an officer puts his hands on someone, handcuffs them, transports them, puts them in jail, and they're incarcerated. Their freedoms are taken away, and that's the authority that the police have, right? Out of that 14,000 times, I often ask everyone, how often do you think the police actually use force in those arrests?
Are you asking me?
Yes. I mean, well, let's start with...
If I had to take a rough guess, I'd say maybe 10%, 1 out of 10.
So 10% would be 1,400 mm-hmm. times. 1,400 times. I'll tell you right now, I'm looking at the number, and I don't have to look at it because I know it because I've been talking about it. 274 times officers used force on someone.
All right. So 280,000 calls.
280,000 calls.
Resulted in 274 uses of force by an officer.
Uses of force by an officer.
What is that? 0.01% or something? Math is not my thing. It's why I'm in radio, but that's pretty low.
It is real low. And I drill it down further because I think about it in terms of the intent of the officer.
Right.
So I look at it in terms of if we intend to arrest somebody, that's when we're putting hands on the person. Okay. So out of that, if you're just talking about arrest, it's less than 2% of our arrests. That means 98% of the time when an officer actually arrests somebody, they're not using force. And to me, that attributes to a couple things. One, the officer's education. Two, the amount of training that the Tulsa Police Department provides. Our training is three times what's required by the state and then even more. Because when an officer finishes our training program, they have about 1,600 hours of training, 1,600 hours of training. They go through a 29 to 30 week academy, and then they go through another several weeks of field training, 16 weeks of field training. And all of it's documented training. And so when you talk about the caliber that we see, and then you take that number and you compare it to what's going on nationally.
Oh, there's no doubt that Tulsa Police Department has some of the highest standards for training and education in, well, the world, much less the United States. I mean, I think that's, I don't know, if it's not common knowledge in this city, it should be.
Well, and quite frankly, I don't know that it is. And that's where we need to do our part in communication, because when we talk about training, you know, whatever the training is, you know, some of the hot topics around use of force is de-escalation training. Well, we've been doing that for a long time, mm-hmm. right? And not only do we have the de-escalation, but it's incorporated into every component that an officer trains on, whether it's interviewing a victim. Because you never have the intent to arrest them, but sometimes you have to de-escalate, or a witness, or a suspect. So I go back to say of those arrests, 98% of the time, it's amazing that our officers are able to get someone in handcuffs without force. Because believe it or not, there's a lot of people that don't want to go to jail.
I actually do believe that. I totally believe you. Do you know... And this is something I'm sure human rights is going to focus in on, is there a fairly high disparity amid the admittedly low number of incidents as far as, you know, ethnicity of the person involved, the suspect?
I'm sorry, what was...
In other words, are you way more likely to get violent with a black guy than a white guy? Or is it about the same? Or is it, you know, roughly the same percentage of arrests? Because we know that most people are not most people arrested, but... You have a much higher probability, and I'm talking nationally here, I'm not picking on Tulsa, of being arrested if you're, you know, African-American rather than white. And I think that's a long-running issue in this country. But what about use of force? Is there any disparity, or do you see the numbers kind of jibe with the, I don't know, the population?
Well, okay, so there's kind of several ways to look at it. First of all, in our training, what has to do with the officer's capacity to use force doesn't deal with a person's gender, race, or ethnicity. It deals with their behavior.
It's totally about the situation.
It is exactly about the behavior of the offender. Now, when officers try to de-escalate that, they can only create an environment where that allows that person to de-escalate, right? They can't force somebody to de-escalate. So everything is a response to behavior. So when you talk about those, the disparity, do we see a disparity in the numbers? Well, if you go back to, if you compare it to the population in the manner that I think is the Community Service Council did, because when they led off that meeting, they compared it to, the first report showed that if you're African-American in Tulsa, you're five times more likely to experience use of force than the white counterpart. I think that's pretty close to the exact terminology from the Equality Indicator report. The most recent report that they just, the 2019 report, it was down to three times as likely.
So that's then, progress.
And so what they're doing is comparing the use of force to the U.S. Census population. Hmm. Now, they said that the Tulsa Police Department disputes those numbers, et cetera, et cetera. Well, when I started out the meeting, I first wanted to clarify that we don't dispute the numbers. The data is the data. It's there and it exists. What's difference is how, what lens do you look at that data through, and how do you critically analyze that data?
In other words, this goes back to what we were talking about real early on, which is context.
Context. And so what's happened here is the data was not provided in our context of use of force to really give that data. So the data was not used in the manner that we would agree with. And I say we because we are more critical of ourselves than they are, actually. It's compared to the census population. Well, and there was talk about numerators and denominators, and I'm not going to get into the math,
okay, but
I remember one thing. I remember one thing. Your units have to match, right? So if you're using a person on per person on as your denominator, then it has to be a person on your numerator. I remember that. And so that's the first correction that has to be made because the handout they provided, I looked at every one of the use of force to make sure I could speak on this. And so out of those 274 incidents that in 2017, 94 were African-American and 178 were white. Okay. So those, my numbers are going to be different than theirs because I'm using per person. But does that change the fact that there's a disparity there? No, it doesn't change the fact. It just changes the end percentage. And then ultimately, when we get down to disparity in use of force, we have to make sure that we account for everyone. Okay, our data is there. And we're in Oklahoma. And Native Americans it's a Native American state. Mm-hmm. And so we include them in our numbers, and they were excluded in the other numbers. Does it change the numbers? Yes, it changes because we want to be very factual in the information that we present because the entire community relies on us 100%. So we have no opportunity for error. So that's why we get very thorough. Some people get tired of listening to us about the explanation of the data. but it is necessary to have a full understanding and comprehension of it because it's like I started off, it's very complex and it's a difficult to understand.
You've sat down with some of these folks, talking about Tiffany Crutcher, maybe, don't know if you ever met her or talked to her.
Yes, I have.
You know, some of these leaders in that community, Black, white, Hispanic, and, you know, otherwise, have they said anything to you that just really hit home or that you went, oh, you know, wow, hadn't thought of it that way before?
Every time we talk, and that's not meant as a joke, but every time we talk, we learn so much from each other, because that the reason we're in some of the situations that we are now is just like any relationship that anybody has. When you stop communication, problems start developing. And so that's why I keep stressing that communication is so vital to our to the survivorship of our relationship, if that makes sense. We have to talk. We have to listen.
I will say, you know, sitting on the fence outside looking in to Tulsa, and I moved here in 92, so I've been here a while. When we had back-to-back, we had the Good Friday situation, we had the Eric Harris situation, we had the Terry Crutcher situation, bam, 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 within the space of a couple of years. I was proud of the city that it didn't get confrontational and that we didn't have mass demonstrations on the street. I mean, we had peaceful marches, we had protests and stuff, and people are concerned, and yeah, we're still arguing over some of this stuff. But is Tulsa, do you think Tulsa is going to, and you were ahead of the curve on the 77 recommendations that, you know, that the Obama administration wanted folks to look at, wanted police departments to look at. We're leading the nation in that effort. And we're about to get a lot of eyeballs on us in 2021. Do you think that we might be able to find, you know, some of the solutions, start this racial reconciliation, you know, nationally? Do you think that effort could potentially start here in Tulsa?
Man, you just set us up for a great finale here. It sounds like absolutely yes. I consistently tout Tulsa as being, you know, and I'm going to speak for the police department, tout the police department for being a national model on some of the work and the innovation and the progressive thinking that we're doing here. And I extend that to not only the police department, but the city and the city as a whole. I think we have a unique opportunity in front of us that the entire country can look at Tulsa, Oklahoma, look at where we were, look at where we were 100 years ago.
Look where we were 60 years ago.
60 years ago. You pick a time frame.
We were still a segregated city in 1964.
Right. And then you look at where we are today, and others around this world will ask, I'm trying to fix things in my city. What did you guys do in Tulsa, Oklahoma? This is a time for the community to do it. It's a time for the police department to do it. It's time for everybody to step up and put in a hand and say, hey, look, Tulsa had tragedy, but now look at them. Look at what's going on there. I want to be there. I want to be them.
You know, it occurred to me the other day, this is silliness, but I was thinking about the yield sign.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget who I saw. It might have been you. I don't know who it was, but it was somebody was sitting there, and Fox 23 had shot an interview with them, and it was just raw video. And I'm looking at this picture of a yield sign, and I knew why that picture was there, because the yield sign was invented by a Tulsa police officer. And I thought, you know, that's kind of an interesting metaphor for, you know, you don't need one side or the other to stop, but you do need somebody to pause and let the other side go through. That had never been done before until I think it was the 40s or 50s when a Tulsa police officer came up with this yield right-of-way sign. I thought, what an interesting metaphor for what we're trying to do now. Find a way to, you know, to let things flow without somebody having to completely stop. So, I don't know. Like I said, silliness. But what do you think's next, Chief?
Well, we're going to finish these meetings out, but what's really next is when the real work begins, because it's the real work's not going to happen in one of these meetings. It's going to happen when we are done with the meetings and we get out on the streets and actually do the work, working with the community, working with everyone. And so, and then start documenting the progress that we're doing and start touting the successes that we have and working together. So, go back to the previous question, when I said we have a lot of work to do, that's what I mean. We have a lot of work to do.
And it is a two-way street. It is an intersection, if you will. What does the community would need to do? Not just, you know, the folks at Town Square Apartments, but the folks at 91st and Memorial where I live, and the folks, you know, what do we need to do? How do we get involved? What do, you know, is there anything that you need from us to make this work?
Well, yes. So we want to make sure everybody is included in this, and because I don't want anybody to think that this is all your police department is doing, because we have a wide range of responsibilities across this entire city. And as we was talking earlier, listening to the community, and oftentimes when we have neighborhoods that are feeling like crime is going on in a neighborhood, but that crime is because packages are getting stolen off their porches, or things are being stolen from their yard. When you consider that for a moment and you think, oh, well, that's not nearly as important as somebody getting shot, right? But we have to be able to tackle all these problems at the same time, because that is equally important. Everybody is involved in this, and so we want to make sure that we're serving every single person in the city. And so when we listen to that, that's what helps us drive how we're going to distribute our resources, where our policemen are going to focus, because we're responsible for everything. And so we want to make sure everybody feels safe. From the furthest south in Tulsa we go, the city limits, all the way to the north and east and west.
Okay. Shane, thoughts? I mean, what do you think from your perspective? You know, how can people get involved? Should they get involved?
Absolutely. You know, you can look in a small scale on how great of a relationship we have with the people we serve. And that small way of looking at it is our homicide unit has one of the highest solvable rates in the nation.
In the world.
In the world. You're absolutely correct. And the good people, the First 48, have commented on it several times. And your police work and the good detective work that you do is a reflection of the people you serve. And I know that sounds like a canned statement, but it's absolute truth, because a lot of the stuff that we do comes from information we get from the public. That shows that they care. That shows that they want to be involved. And the people of the First 48 keep renewing their contract with us because it's rejuvenating to them. Because that's their job, is to come and look at how police departments do things and how they work with the community. And we've got such a good rapport with the good people that we serve that they are very engaged with us. And that's one small way that you can look at it. If you had to like pinpoint an example, that's a really good example, because people don't like violent crime. And they love to be have that feeling that they're helping. And they love to see the return on that help. And that's a good way to see how that return on their investment is working. So, yeah, work with your police department, because you'll see that return. And it's very rewarding. And the people we serve love it.
Jonathan Brooks, Tulsa's Deputy Chief of Police, and Sergeant Shane Toole, Public Information Officer. Special thanks to KRMG's Russell Mills for the interview. This is Oklahoma Perspective. For Cox Media Group, I'm Bert Williams.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.